Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is part two of our mid-season review podcast. You can always find us at downtodunk.com. You can always find us on Twitter as well, at DTD Podcast. Be sure to engage with us, ask us questions. We'll be sure to ask them on the podcast. We appreciate you, the listeners, and sit back, relax, and enjoy these interviews. I'd like to welcome Eli Friedman from Thunderous Intentions and a contributor to Yahoo Sports and also a high school student, which is like the craziest combination of things ever. Honestly, Eli, you're just an inspiration to, you know, lots of people, and I think it's really cool everything you've done, and we are just proud to have you back on the Down to Dunk Podcast. How you doing, Eli?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's been a great season so far, so I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. So first question, this is just kind of a baseline question, is over under 60 wins for the Thunder. Today they sit at 31 wins. So where would you put them at the end of the season?
I think it's very close. If I had to pick it, I think it'd be over. They stand at 31 wins right now. They're 31-10, and they still have to play 41 of those games. With Westbrook returning after the All-Star break, they should get to 60. They finished 60-22 last year, so they're right on track right now. They play Miami twice before the end of the year. They play them once before the All-Star break next Wednesday away, and then they play Miami at home, their first game back from the All-Star break on February 20th. So those are two games that can go either way. The Thunder, they're on track right now to get over 60 wins, and that'd be nice. With Westbrook, they're playing good basketball right now on a three-game winning streak, playing great basketball. So once they get Westbrook back, it'll be even better, and they should be rolling.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that they could win 60 games, because I projected them, and when I knew Westbrook was going to be out, and you can almost count, you know, the time that he's been out will probably be equivalent of what they thought he was going to be at the beginning of the season. So
right.
The beginning of the season projections were, you know, pretty spot on with what we thought would happen. And, you know, I projected them to be low 50s, and I told people, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they won 48 games. And I guess a lot of that was, you know, speculating what Lamb and Jackson and thinking that Steven Adams would be in Tulsa all year. So it's been really, really great. And so that kind of brings me to our next question. What's the most surprising thing about this team aside from the Russell Westbrook situation?
Yeah, I think you spoke about it a little in what you just said. I think it's been the maturity of this Thunder team. Of course, if you keep the same guys, they're going to mature. And the Thunder, obviously a young team with a lot of great young players. But the maturity this year has been awesome. It's pretty crazy to think that basically Sam Presti and Scott Brooks threw Jeremy Lamb right into the fire to fill the void of Kevin Martin going to Minnesota and having him come in and be a big scorer for the Thunder. And to be honest, he's done that. He's done a great job. Him and Reggie Jackson have fired this bench. Of course, Russ being out has Jackson in the starting lineup. But before that, Jackson and Lamb were leading this Thunder bench to great numbers and probably the best in the league. I think they were scoring over 30 a game at one point. So the maturity of this team has been awesome. Guys like Steven Adams, Jeremy Lamb really matured, even being thrown into the fire and saying, hey, you're in the Oklahoma City Thunder rotation, and this is your first real season in the NBA. So here it is, and they've done an awesome job. So I'm pretty shocked at that.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's my favorite Thunder bench. You know, when Russ is in the lineup, it's my favorite Thunder bench. I mean, just the personalities that some of these guys have, and I guess really the personality comes from Steven Adams more than anybody. But just the overall just swagger that bench has is, I mean, I'm just ready for the playoffs to start to see what they can do.
Most definitely.
So tell me this. This is kind of a tough one. Rate Scott Brooks's performance from 1 to 10 for this season.
I think I'd give him an 8.5 right now. I think great coaches are the ones who can make adjustments throughout the throughout adversity and injuries. And with Westbrook's injury, I think Scott Brooks has done a good job adjusting to it. Despite his injury, the Thunder still stand a game out of first place in the West right now, which is probably exactly where they wanted to be. He's had some weird rotations. I think he's done a good job of getting the guys in at the right situations with if the Thunder are going to go small, not to play Steven Adams and to play Nick Collison more and go and put KD at the four. So he's done a good job of that. He's had some weird rotations with Perry Jones playing sometimes, sometimes Perry Jones not. So it's been interesting, but overall, I think he's done a good job. I mean, if you asked me where the Thunder would be right now, I'd probably tell you where they are right now with Westbrook. So Westbrook out, they're right where they need to be.
And it's funny, you know, there's been lots of criticism of Scott Brooks, and it's easy to criticize him when he's playing guys like Derek Fisher or Cephalosha or Perkins too much. But I looked at the record today, and I knew what it was, but just sitting and looking at it, like, that's amazing. You know, it seems like we've been through kind of a roller coaster season, but if you told me we were 31-10 at the midpoint of the season, doesn't sound like a roller coaster season at all, but it kind of has been for Thunder fans.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like as Thunder fans, they take winning for granted in general. So, like, even the Thunder losing some games with Westbrook out and having a bad last 10 games, they panicked a little bit, but you have to realize the overall type thing and taking a step back and saying, hey, we're 31-10 and right where we need to be in for a game out of first place in the West.
Definitely. Next question, and I think that you might have some good insight to this because you know Reggie Jackson personally, but what are the odds of a Reggie Jackson signing a contract extension with Oklahoma City?
I know myself that I've myself been very worried that Sam Presti will let Reggie walk, only because of the fact of how great he's been playing this year. He could start on a lot of teams. He could be Sixth Man of the Year this year, which would only raise his stock for your general managers out there to go after Jackson. Overall, though, I think the Thunder will keep Jackson and sign him to probably a 2 or 3 year deal would be my guess. If he consistently shows he's an elite guard and can be a starting guard anywhere else right now, I'm sure he'll sign a huge contract somewhere else. We all thought James Harden would be in OKC for a long time, and then we were shocked when Sam Presti shipped him to Houston. So honestly, who knows? But I would think that the Thunder signed him to a two or three year deal and see how those 2 or 3 years go. And if he doesn't blossom into an elite guard, then I would think he would stay in Oklahoma City long term.
Yeah. What? This was addressed earlier in an earlier interview, but do you think that Russell Westbrook's injury is cause for concern for the rest of his career?
It's a very interesting situation to me. I don't really know the details of what's going on with Russ, and it's a bit sketchy and a bit fishy for me, to be honest, because who saw the knee swelling and who saw the Thunder automatically shutting him down for a little bit? I didn't even. Once I heard the news, I was like, wait, what? He was playing great basketball, you know? Mm-hmm. What's going on now? So when I first heard it, I was like, what's going on with his knee? Because having surgery for the swelling is a bit odd because he just got back from that injury. So maybe it's something long-term that he'll have problems with his knee. And I know Thunder fans sure hope that's not the problem, but it's something to look for down the line.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think that the Thunder signing Reggie to a long-term extension, do you think that would have any bearing on whether they believe Russ is going to have issues going forward?
Yeah, I think that would be it. If the Thunder do sign Reggie to a really long-term deal, then that would maybe give a sign saying that, hey, Russ Westbrook may not be healthy for the rest of his career and Jackson has to be our long-term point guard. So I think that would be the sign from Sam Presti, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. Next question. Do you think Presti will make a deal before the February trade deadline?
Perk said it after the 2012 finals, and I'll always remember it. And he said, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. So I think the Thunder are playing fine basketball, and that's without Westbrook. So I don't think Sam Presti should, and I don't think he will make a trade deadline before the February deadline. And if there was one person he'd put on the trading block for Oklahoma City, I think it would probably be someone like Jeremy Lamb if the Thunder really wanted to get a big piece and someone in free agency, maybe Perkins throwing that deal, and maybe even Reggie Jackson, who knows. But that's if they wanted to get like a quality big man out there who's going to be a free agent soon, like someone like LaMarcus Aldridge or somebody. But I really don't think that Presti should, and I don't think he will make a deal. I think he's very confident in his personnel.
What do you think about Gary Neal, about getting Gary Neal to Oklahoma City?
Yeah, I think the Thunder, if there was a player to get, it would be someone like Gary Neal, a knockdown shooter, because the Thunder have shot the ball pretty poorly this year, and Jeremy Lamb's a little inconsistent from deep, so I love when a guy like DaQuan Cook was with Oklahoma City, and he was someone that the Thunder could put in and hitting a couple threes and in rhythm threes and a quality and consistent 3-point shooter. I think the Thunder could use someone like that. If you looked at past teams who won the championships, I mean, Miami had Shane Battier, Mike Miller. I mean, those teams had that deadly 3-point shooter. I think the Thunder could use someone like that, but I don't think it's a necessity.
Yeah. Do you think that if Neal were to come to Oklahoma City, do you think that Brooks would play Neal over Derek Fisher?
I sure hope so.
That's my concern with that, because people have thrown that trade idea out a lot. And I just think, man, Scott Brooks loves Derek Fisher. I just don't, because, you know, we got Nate Robinson. You know, Nate Robinson is a streaky scorer, and he's a guy he can be inconsistent, but he's also undeniably an NBA player. And undeniably a guy who can come in and score. But Brooks just didn't play him. And I worry that maybe Neal would be a similar situation, and maybe trading for him would just add to any sort of frustration that we have with Brooks's coaching.
Yeah, that's also an interesting situation from the Thunder aspect. Derek Fisher getting time, some people love it. I mean, most people hate it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with Perkins. But a guy like that, Derek Fisher, he's a veteran. He's been there. He's done that. He has some rings under his belt. So him being on the floor helping guys like KD and Jackson and young guys like Jeremy Lamb, that always helps in the locker room and on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And I love his role when Westbrook was in. He'd come in, play 10 minutes. He would foul the crap out of people, and he would just take threes, and that was it.
He'd get on your face defensively. He'd make it tough for you.
Yeah, and I loved it. You know, Fisher didn't irritate me at all up until this last stretch when he's playing over, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a game. And, like, I mean, he's just at the age where he's just not supposed to do that. And I think I'd
almost have Royal Ivy in the game.
No kidding. Me too. That's what I, you know, that's frustrating. Maybe Ivy coming, just being with the team for just a few days, maybe he will start getting a little bit of those minutes.
Yeah.
Next question. After watching a half season of Jeremy Lamb, what kind of player do you project him to be?
I had so much difficulty thinking about this question because it's so hard to compare his game to someone. He's such an interesting and unique player. Mm-hmm. I think he will be a type of Danny Green type of guy. Until he can find ways to score by not only shooting the ball, but if he can be aggressive, take smarter shots, and use his length defensively and be active any way possible, I think his ceiling could be like a guy like Joe Johnson. He has a similar game to Joe Johnson. Obviously, he has a smaller frame than Joe, because Joe Johnson's kind of like a 6'8", 6'7", type shooting guard. Jeremy Lamb's only about 6'5", but they play a similar type of game. They like to shoot the ball, and they're very smooth and nonchalant with how they play.
I think that's a good comparison, and I really like that Danny Green comparison as well. I'd never thought about that. And when I think about this, I always gravitate toward like a Rip Hamilton, just because of his frame and the way that he moves.
Yeah, I think Rip Hamilton played a little harder, though. He knew how to use ball screens, off ball screens. So yes. Jeremy Lamb's a little bit more of a nonchalant player.
Mm-hmm. And he's also a better outside shooter than Rip Hamilton was. Rip Hamilton was the master of the mid-range game, and he's just not like that. It's really not a very good comparison, but I just like I gravitate toward comparisons whenever a player looks like another player. But I think he could be a prototypical shooting guard and be a terrific role player for this team.
Definitely.
Last question. What is your favorite thing about Steven Adams?
I love Steven Adams. I think he's a Sam Presti. He made Sam Presti look like a genius. It's kind of interesting because if you watch film of him and Pitt, you would be like, what could this guy bring to the NBA? I mean, he doesn't do anything flashy. He doesn't do anything where you'd be like, oh, I need this guy on my team. I need to draft this guy. But Sam Presti saw it. And what I love about, my favorite thing about Steven Adams has to be his fight and his energy. He's similar as with Nick Collison with his energy off the bench. But his fight is just unbelievable. He doesn't care who he's playing against. It could be Dwight Howard. He doesn't care. He'll go after you. He's always creating havoc for the opponent and getting into your head. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't want to mess with a guy like Steven Adams. I'm sure him and Perk get along pretty well in the locker room.
I absolutely love Steven Adams. And if you would have told me that Steven Adams would be one of my favorite players this season, you know, in June, I would have told you, you are crazy. Because I mean, we did a podcast, a live podcast during the draft, and we shut down the podcast after they picked Steven Adams because we were so disappointed, and we just ended it.
I was at that draft, and as soon as they did, I thought that I was pretty sure they were going to draft Adams just from hearing mumblings about him, about his workout in Oklahoma City and how much they loved him. But when they drafted him, I was kind of like, you know, and the same thing with that Reggie Jackson pick 2 years back.
Yep.
You're kind of shaking your head like, what is Sam Presti doing here? But as Thunder fans like to say, in Presti we trust, and you got to trust a guy like Sam Presti. He knows what he's doing.
Most definitely. What was it like going to the draft?
It's a very fun environment, but it's very, especially this year's draft. I go every year, but this year's draft was very, it was much more fun than past years because of the uncertainty, you know. As soon as the Cavs picked Anthony Bennett, you were like, wait, what? And watching Nerlens Noel's face was a bit hard to the heart, and it was just a fun draft. After the first round, it gets a little boring, but as soon as the picks come in, it gets a little fun.
That's awesome. I'd love to go to the draft someday. Well, Eli, thanks for coming back on the podcast. We can follow you at @Eli_NBAOKC, and we'll be reading your stuff on Thunderous Intentions, and also I'm looking for you on Yahoo Sports. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast, Eli.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
I'd like to welcome Anthony Slater back to the Down to Dunk podcast. Anthony, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want to give you props on the Stone Cold Steve Adams nickname. It's probably one of the best nicknames in the NBA. And you're the one who came up with it, right?
It was through I was like throwing different nicknames out there. I don't know. This was probably pretty early in the season, and I don't remember who the Twitter follower was, but he threw that one out there, and then I kind of took it from there. So, I mean, I didn't come up with it, but I've tried to popularize it a little bit, and now Carson Cunningham seems really into popularizing it. So
yeah, it's perfect.
It is. It's a really good nickname, especially for his style of play, and it works. It works for sure.
Definitely. Okay, our first question is, and we asked you the same question before the season, but over under 60 wins, and the Thunder sit at 31 wins today.
I'll say over. I mean, because they did 31, and, you know, I don't know how many games Westbrook hasn't played. I think it's something like, it's 13, 14 maybe. Mm-hmm. No, it's more than that, maybe 15. So, I mean, they won 31. They're on pace for 62, and they did this without, you know, one of the top 10 players in the league for, you know, almost half of it. So, I mean, that's got to be a good sign right there, because they should get him back within the next, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe. And they've shown an ability to win even without him. I think that 60 is about right where they'll probably finish, if you're asking me. But I might go over. I might go 61, 62.
Yeah, I'm with you. I completely agree. It's so weird to think, you know, if you told me that Russ was going to be out, I would say there's no shot. You know, they're going to win low 50s, maybe even into the 40s. Basically just,
yeah, I mean,
I didn't trust Jeremy Lamb or any of those guys at all.
Yeah, I mean, you remember the beginning of the season when he was supposed to be out for, you know, four to six weeks. Vegas set it at like 52 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that shows you right there kind of what the public – although I remember thinking it was a little low, even though Westbrook was supposed to be out. But, you know, that's the thought. But, I mean, we're sitting here halfway point. I was almost surprised that, halfway point, they're at 31, so they're on pace for 62.
Yeah.
That almost surprised me a little bit. But
that surprised me a lot, because it's felt like a roller coaster season so far. And if you look at that record, that doesn't show a roller coaster season at all.
No, they were 32-9 at this time last year, but – you know, I don't know how much that says.
Yeah. Next question. Rate Scott Brooks' performance from 1 to 10.
Yes, 6-7 area. I mean, there's been some questionable rotations, and obviously they haven't shown as much growth as you'd maybe like, you know, without Westbrook, because, you know, they had an offseason to think they weren't going to be without him. So you might have, you know, wanted to see a little bit there. But, I mean, overall, I mean, like we said, we're talking about a team that's won 31 games, and they're missing one of the, you know, a premier point guard in the league. for half that time, which is good. And I think he's shown more flexibility this year with rotations. You know, he's given Perry Jones spot minutes. He's given Steven Adams a role right away when, you know, a lot of people were thinking, you know, what's his team to be going to just, you know, out just because he's older, get minutes. So I think he's shown flexibility, a willingness to play as young guys. There's times when, you know, you get a little frustrated when, you know, Fisher you think's playing too much, or Perkins, Cephalosha, that type of deal. But, I mean, overall, I think he's handled it well. And sitting at 31-10, so you can't really argue with the results.
Yeah, and we're so, you know, entrenched in the football mentality, the college football mentality, that it's easy to hate on Scott Brooks when we're losing. You know, just about a week ago, I felt like there was a lot of Scott Brooks hate, but then these past two wins, it has kind of quieted it down. But, you know, Brooks is going to take a lot of heat when this team loses, and it does have a lot to do with his rotations, I feel like. But overall, I think he is a really nice coach for this team.
Yeah, I mean, in sports as a whole, a lot of times coaches just become kind of like cop-outs. When a lot of times people don't have, you know, cemented arguments, it's just like, you know, the coach did something wrong. You know, because you just got to kind of blame somebody for a loss. And like you said, when it is a football mentality, when you think it's like do or die, they had to win that game. When, I mean, in the grand scheme, none of these games really matter that much because this season is going to be defined in, you know, April, May, June, when it doesn't matter if the Thunder go in as a 1-2, you know, 4-5 seed, really. I mean, you'd like to have home court, but, I mean, the year they went to the finals, they didn't have home court.
Yeah, exactly. Next question, what's the most surprising thing about this team aside from all the Russell Westbrook stuff?
I think it's the development of the young guys, and like I just mentioned, Brooks' willingness to play them, and them, you know, showing up when their number's called. Jeremy Lamb, who we, especially in preseason, we're kind of worried about as a, he seemed like a volume shooter who was going to, you know, to get 12, 13 points, he was going to need about 12, 13 shots. But he's shooting pretty high percentage. I mean, he's dropped a little bit lately, but I mean, he's shown an ability to come off the bench, you know, hit his shots when he gets his opportunity, play better defense than we thought. I mean, he seems like he's going to be a really good player. And then obviously Adams, I mean, we all know about his quick development. I mean, people are already calling for him to be the starter. So I think it's just the most promising, I guess I would say surprising, is just the young guys are coming into their own already, you know, halfway through their kind of first season in a rotation.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing I love about Jeremy Lamb is that he always takes shots in the flow of the offense, even if he's not hitting. Like, I'm glad that he's taking those shots and, you know, willing to step up and know that, you know, his role is to hit threes and to play good defense. And he's not afraid, like Cephalosha is sometimes, it feels like, to shoot the ball. You know, we don't see pump fakes and stuff like that from Jeremy Lamb, which I really like.
Yeah, I think the best thing I could probably say about Lamb is before the season, if you were to ask about Lamb, you'd probably say, you know, if he's on the court, like his one and maybe even only skill, like just score points. And if you're not shooting, you need him off the court. But there's times when he's not even shooting that well. And I mean, there's never a time when you're like, I need him off the court. Like even when he's shooting maybe 1-7. Because he does everything. I mean, his sprints, I mean, I feel like he's pretty skilled in almost all areas of the game, at least it's some ability.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of that showed to me in that last Minnesota game on the road. He had some really key rebounds and key plays, even though he didn't seem to be, you know, on fire. Next question, odds that Reggie Jackson will sign a contract extension with OKC?
Oh, man. It's so early to speculate. I'm going to say the odds he'll be here after his rookie contract. I say under 50.
Okay.
45, 40, maybe. It's going to depend on him, his willingness to stay, and his willingness to take a lesser role than he'll probably be offered from somewhere else. I think the Thunder have been helped a little bit by his recent play. Especially in the starting lineup, because even if he goes back to a bench role and plays like he had, there's at least somewhat lingering doubt, I'm sure, in some front offices from what they've seen the last few weeks that, you know, if we gave him a starting role, maybe he would struggle a bit. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I think it's too early to really know. There's so much, you know, so much storylines to be developed this year with playoffs and how he plays in the playoffs and,
yeah.
you know, how Brooks plays. And, you know, if Brooks is – if he's playing really well and Brooks is giving him a really heavy role in the playoffs and he's satisfied with that, or, you know, maybe he struggles in the playoffs and he's cheap or Brooks doesn't play him enough. I mean, I just feel like there's so much to happen that will go into eventually deciding that.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a chance that he gets traded for a lottery pick in this next draft, you know, maybe to a team that needs a point guard, but they, you know, miss out on Marcus Smart and Dante Exum?
Yeah, that is that's kind of an interesting thought, like, idea that's been thrown out there. I guess it's possible. I would think the Thunder, to trade him, they'd want a guy that could step, they think could step in and kind of become a six-man type thing. And I feel like, you know, they'd want a guy like Exum or Smart or Jackson. Otherwise, I think they'd probably maybe get a lottery deal, but also want maybe another guy that they can bring off the bench.
Sure. Do you think Press will make a trade before the February deadline?
No. I'm not saying he won't. He might. I mean, there's a decent chance he does. I don't think it will make anything big. I think they're just sitting there knowing, you know, we're playing 8-5, we're playing pretty good ball, and we're about to basically trade for an all-star point guard that we're comfortable with. So I think they're just banking on the fact that when Westbrook's back, there's not really any rotation minutes available for anyone to bring in. Because, I mean, you got to remember, they are 100% sold on staying under the luxury tax this year. So anyone they could bring in is going to be a cheap guy. I mean, unless they swing something with, you know, maybe Sepulveda's contract, Perkins' contract. But I don't know how willing they are to break up kind of like a core slash starting lineup of a team that's gone so deep in the playoffs the last few years. It just doesn't seem in their nature. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm not even saying they're not going to do it. I struggle to see them actually pulling the trigger and kind of breaking things up when they are going pretty well right now, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Do you think there's any players that Presti's shopping?
That he's going after, or he's shopping from his own team?
That he's shopping, like, is he shopping Perkins or Sefolosha?
Well, those would be the two, but, I mean, Perkins is a tough sell.
Sure.
With 18 mil for 2 years, so, I mean, he's almost like, we'll give you this package if we can throw him in, you know? Like, mm-hmm. nobody's going to go and take Perkins 18 million right now.
Right.
Sefolosha is an interesting one because he's an expiring deal where both sides, you know, the other side would like to have an expiring deal like Sefolosha, and then the Thunder wouldn't mind trading him because if they think they're not going to re-sign him, and as they've shown in the past with, you know, Jeff Green, James Harden, they want to get assets before they just lose him, you know, for nothing. So Sefolosha is the guy I would see being most likely to be thrown in a deal. And then if you have a deal, you know how fringe parts kind of get thrown into it. And
sure.
Then you never know who's going.
What do you think about Gary Neal?
I think he'd be a good fit. He can shoot. He shot the Heat out of the finals game last year, so you know he can hit some clutch shots in the playoffs. He can get hot, and they need three-point shooting more than anything. I don't know if they'll actually, you know, I mean, he's on the block. I know Milwaukee's looking to trade him. He makes about $3.5 million, so that would put the Thunder over the tax, and that's more than the Maynard trade exception, which they'd like to use.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I mean, something like the trade exception at Sefolosha for Gary Neal. But then, I mean, that'll get you some shooting, but then you got to worry maybe late in the playoffs when you're playing a team like Miami. Sefolosha may be good to throw another body at LeBron, another 6 fouls. So, I mean, you may be giving away a little bit of defense, perimeter defense for shooting. It'll be interesting.
Do you think that Brooks would play Gary Neal over Derek Fisher?
I know. I'm not saying he shouldn't, but I don't think he would.
I don't think he would either.
I think Brooks has shown, you know, he just trusts Derek Fisher more than probably any player he's ever coached.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm interested to see if when Westbrook comes back, and I mean, we're getting deep into the playoffs, and the Thunder has to cut down its rotation a little bit because usually every team kind of cuts it down some. I'm interested to see how many minutes Fisher's going to get. But like you said, I mean, I struggle to see them bringing somebody in and then that just pushing Fisher completely out of the rotation.
Yeah, and I love Fisher's role with Westbrook in the lineup because, I mean, it was pretty perfect for him because he was only playing, you know, 10 to 12 minutes a game, and the guy still plays really hard. You have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, and he can bother. He can, for 10 to 12 minutes, he can bother a perimeter scorer because he's still pretty bulky. And
yeah,
like you said, he plays really hard. And like, he'll get 4 fouls in like 3 minutes, but I mean, he pushes people off their spots. And like, he bothered James Harden in the playoffs. Actually, like, he has a weird way of actually still being an effective defender for like little spurts.
Yeah, if we can play him for 10 minutes and he just fouls the crap out of whoever he's playing against, I think that's, you know, that's perfect for him. And he can still hit shots.
Yeah.
So he's valuable, but in limited minutes, I think.
Yeah, the stuff lately when he's been kind of, they've been having to have him on point a little bit. And then, you know, he's shooting the pull-up threes. I hate the pull-up threes. Mm-hmm. That he takes. I mean, his shot should be the one where Durant draws two and kicks, and he's wide open with like 8 on the shot clock, not 17 on the clock, and he just dribbles up and pulls.
Yeah.
But.
After watching a half season of Jeremy Lamb, what kind of player do you project him to be going forward?
I mean, I think he's going to be really good pretty quickly. I mean, he's a 6-man type. I think he'll eventually be a starting 2-guard in the league, you know, worthy of getting 30 to 35 minutes. And maybe even in Oklahoma City, because I think he may be a starting 2-guard next year, to be honest. I don't know. I don't think Cephalosis. I mean, he could come back. I mean, I know how much they like him, but with the development of Lamb and then Robertson kind of behind him, I think – They're happy with that. That'll be a really cheap and pretty effective kind of offensive defensive mix of a 2-guard.
Yeah.
And then they won't have to pay Cephalosia. So I mean, I think Lamb's gonna be good. And I think we're talking about a 21-year-old basically in his rookie year, already showing an effectiveness as an off the bench kind of spot rotation guy. So I think he'll only get better and only more minutes moving forward.
Yeah, a comparison that I heard from Eli Friedman was like a rich man's Danny Green, which I kind of liked.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He's a little bit more athletic than Green is, but
yeah,
I liked him in that type of role for the Thunder.
Yeah, that's a decent comparison. I remember before the year, I had read some like Kevin Martin comparisons, and I think that's shown to not be true. I mean, he's not as prolific a scorer as Martin, but he like we were just talking about earlier, he does a lot more stuff than we were expecting to him as far as defense, rebounding. He can pass pretty well when given the opportunity. So, I mean, he's got a lot of promise.
Yeah, definitely. Last question. What is your favorite thing about Steven Adams?
I like it. Just his interactions with the media are pretty funny. And as a guy that covers the team, I mean, that might be my favorite thing. He'll give you funny sound bites. Not extended, really like thoughtful, you know, interpretations of the game, but just funny, quick sound bites that you could throw in a story or, you know, whatever that'll work. So, I mean, that may be the thing I most like about him. I mean, there's a lot, though, obviously he's going to be a good player, and then the persona, the Stone Cold Steve Adams persona, he's kind of continues to live up to. I mean, he's fouled out of 3 straight games now. He's getting people elbowing him in the face, and he's just kind of stoic through it all, which is funny. There's not a lot to dislike about, the 20-year-old center.
Yeah, definitely. I think the list of people who like him and love this guy is just growing. Because, I mean, he's gonna be a league favorite in my opinion, just because of his toughness. If he's not already considered to be a league favorite, I love Steven Adams.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm just gonna tack.
He's gonna tick off some in an extended playoff series when they're seeing him, you know, 5, 6, 7 straight games, he's gonna get some, you know, cause some technicals in a series.
Yes.
That's gonna be pretty funny to watch.
Yeah, and he, you know, if we do match up with Memphis again, if Memphis can get it together, you know, he's gonna be a great guy to have to go against those big guys.
You know what I think he's gonna be important against? I think he's gonna be important against Miami if it ever comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Perkins is showing, I mean, he just doesn't, that's just a terrible matchup for him.
Yep.
Athletically. And I think Adams is a guy you might want to play 25 to 30 minutes. Because Miami's shown, I mean, big guys can get to the Heat. They can disrupt the Heat offensively if they're getting a lot of rebounds. They're kind of, you know, blocking some shots. And, I mean, Hibbert's shown, I mean, not that Adams is Hibbert at all, but, I mean, those are the kind of players that bother Miami. Perkins just doesn't have the skill set at this point of his career. So I think Adams may be important if that ever comes to him.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm just praying that Scott Brooks will trust him enough to put him out there
mm-hmm.
come playoff time.
You got to stay on the floor, though, if he gets out there.
Yeah.
Fouling out every game.
That's
like
true. Do you think that's because, like, he knows that he's playing a limited role and he's just going to go all out, not care if he fouls out?
Yeah, I think there's some of that to it, but I don't know how much he even thinks about that side of things. I almost think they just tell him go out there and just do whatever, and he's
mm-hmm.
and the rest, you know, he gets quick whistles because he's a rookie and he's really physical and he's just still learning the game. I mean, even for a rookie, he's inexperienced as far as, you know, he didn't play as much growing up as most rookies.
Yeah, that's true. I know it's mid-season review. And I would say Kevin Durant's the MVP, and I know there's a lot of basketball to be played, but would you consider KD to be the MVP as well?
Yeah, I think that's starting to become kind of the consensus just with this recent streak lately. LeBron's kind of pacing himself, it seems, just like the Heat are pacing themselves, which, I mean, you can understand. We're talking about the two-time champs that know when their season is going to be defined. So, it's obviously a two-man race, and I think Durant clearly has the edge right now. You never know what's going to happen in the last 41 games, like shown last year when you know, the Heat rattled off 27 in a row and LeBron was so good, and that's kind of won him the MVP last year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right now I don't think there's any question as to Durant.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Anthony, thanks for coming back on the podcast. We'll be sure to read all your stuff at newsok.com and in the Oklahoman, and look for Anthony's podcast, Thunder Buddies, on iTunes as well. Thanks a lot, Anthony, and have a good day.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
I'd like to welcome Carson Cunningham from KOCO to the podcast today. Carson, thanks for being here.
Good to be back. It's been a while.
It has. I don't know why Andrew's left you out in the dark, man. I apologize about that. So luckily I'm here to get you back, you know, going on the pod. So we've got some questions, but I think we'd be fools if we didn't spend at least a little bit of today talking about Kevin Durant and this run that he has put together. And so over the last, let's just say the last five games, which the Thunder have won 5 in a row. They beat Houston at Houston, Golden State at home, Sacramento at home, Portland home, and then just won last night at San Antonio. And Durant has scored 36 points, 46 points, 30 points, 54 points, and 36 points in those, and shooting a ridiculous clip from 3-point line from the field. It's just been this ridiculous tear. And I just want to get kind of your thoughts on his play over the last week or so.
I mean, it's been historic. I mean, I was at the Golden State game where he scored 54. I was at the Portland game where he just went nuts in the last 3 or 4 minutes. And I tweeted this, and I really mean it. Like, years from now, hopefully, I'll be bouncing my grandkids on my lap, telling them about the times that I got to watch Kevin Durant play basketball. Like, that's what we're dealing with here, in that we're not just witnessing like an all-star that plays at an all-star level. We're witnessing one of the top 10 players to ever play the game. Maybe the best scorer to ever play the game. So it's so fun to be at the peak when he does stuff like that. You can tell everyone kind of senses the moment when he dribbles it up to the top of the key, and then when he actually launches it and hits it. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I've been working in the media for about 6 years now, and there's nothing that quite tops Kevin Durant going for 54 and at the peak and having the place chant MVP. So it's been a magical five games for him, and it really kind of quieted all the people. I mean, I was one of them that was kind of concerned about the Thunder without Westbrook. Well, now Russ can keep wearing his suits and kind of hang out for a little bit and let Kevin do his thing. But it's been historic, no doubt.
Yeah, one of the craziest things for me is to watch them play against Denver and Utah, where they lost, you know, to Utah by 11, Denver by 13. And both games were kind of out of it the entire time.
I mean, they were.
What did you think was going to happen with that? Like, I thought I was ready to concede that I'm not going to watch them until Russ comes back.
Well, my colleague, my sports director, Brian Keating, he had the opinion during that stretch that the Thunder, or actually right before that stretch, that the Thunder would not make the playoffs if they didn't have Russell for an entire season. I thought that was crazy just because they have Kevin. And at first, it looked like he was right and I was wrong. Well, now I think I'm more on the right side if Kevin's going to keep doing this. So it was definitely concerning. And the thing that was concerning the most was, yeah, you don't have Russell, but the main concern is Ibaka. He plays so much better when Russell's on the floor setting him up, and Kevin just didn't have any help in those games, and it was looking pretty bad. But I've always wanted Kevin to go in. I called him last night. I said I hope he went into Kobe Iverson mode and just shot.
Absolutely.
I just want to see one game where he shoots it like 45 times like Iverson and Kobe used to do, and just to see what happened. And that's what's remarkable about this five-game run is he's shooting the ball under 30 times and getting an insane amount of points. That's what's incredible.
Yeah, that's what I was listening this morning. They had this clip from Dan Levitard's show, I guess it was yesterday, and they were asking the question, is Durant kind of hoping Russ just stays out for a while so he can continue to get these statistics? And what most media members, or not most media, but a lot of the national media doesn't understand is he's not shooting a lot. He shot 15 times against the Kings, 25 times against Portland, 22 last night, 21 against Houston, and none of those games, that's not a ridiculous amount of shots for somebody that in his caliber could be shooting 30 to 35 a game.
Well, that's what was so funny about LeBron's jealous comment. It's like, LeBron, you've shot, there's been more games where you've shot 30 shots than Kevin. Like, Kevin, we all want Kevin to shoot more than he does. That, the game he scored 54, the last, I don't know, 3-4 possessions, he didn't even get the ball. So
yeah,
if he was a gunner, it'd be one thing. But he really plays in the flow of the game. You can tell he's not concerned with numbers. There's just certain times where he just takes over and does it anyway.
Yeah, and it's just funny to hear all the comments from the players. Like, they're most of the players, especially like Portland said it even last night, some of the San Antonio guys and Golden State guys, they just walk off the court and they're like, well, when he's hitting like that, you just kind of got to tip your hat and move on to the next one.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you do? The guy, Kevin likes to say he's 6'9", but he's really like 6'10", maybe 6'11". Like, I don't know why. He has like a phobia of being called taller than 6'9". But how do you stop a guy that's literally 6'10"? And, you know, Kevin likes to lean back just a tad on his shot anyway. So there's nothing you can do. I mean, Nicholas Batum gave him room, and he hit it. But I don't care if Nick Batum is inside his jersey. I don't think he can block the shot.
Yeah.
Well, and just, if you got to get up with feeling,
you give him room, he goes by you. You press up, he goes by you. You give him room, he shoots the shot. It's just he's as unguardable as he's ever been. Which for me, and I know you remember this because you might have even been at OSU at this point, but he's going back to that point where I saw some games when he was at Texas where he was the best scorer I've ever seen play the game in college. Were you at OSU? Okay.
I was at the 3 overtime game where he went ballistic at Stillwater. And yeah, you're right. I mean, there was times. That's why we may have been biased being here in Big 12 country, but I never would have taken Greg Oden over Kevin Durant. I watched him do that in that 3 overtime game. I watched him in the Big 12 title game in the tournament where he was the best player on the floor against Kansas and almost single-handedly beat Kansas. I watched him score 25 in the first half at Allen Fieldhouse. Like, the guy was born to do this, and we're seeing a guy that was born to do this put in the work and become a force of nature that we haven't really seen before.
And the craziest thing, and you can speak on this a little bit as well, is that you know, we kind of just joke and are like, the, you know, MVP race is clearly Durant's right now. And it's hard for us to say that because LeBron is so good all the time. But I saw statistics this morning. He's got a higher PER than LeBron. He's got higher points per game than LeBron. He actually has more rebounds than LeBron and only trails him in assists by like a little under 2 assists a game. And so as far as my opinion is, it's a clear-cut thing right now that Durant is the MVP. What do you think about that?
No, I think you're right. I think he definitely has the lead. I think Russell's injury has really put a focus on Kevin and allowed that storyline to emerge nationally. Because, you know, we're all well aware of what Kevin does every year. But now the thing I would be concerned about, though, is I think Kevin led the MVP race last year at this point.
That's
right before LeBron went on that, you know, ridiculous winning streak and just started hitting like 18 of 20 shots every night. And LeBron just kind of took it away from him. So while Kevin has the lead, LeBron is more than capable of going on another tear. But Miami's locked into the 2 seed. They're 5 or 6 games behind Indiana. They're like 7 ahead of third place. So like they're on cruise control. They're letting D-Wade sit out. I don't know how motivated LeBron's going to be to put up huge numbers every night, because he kind of got caught up in that win streak last year and just went nuts. So I think Kevin's in the lead and he's in a good spot, but there's plenty of time for LeBron to catch up for sure.
And I can't make sense of what the Heat are doing, because they're just not engaged is what it looks like, which is fine because they don't need to be right now. But they also made that decision to go with the trade of Joel Anthony and kind of depending a lot on Oden, because they aren't a good rebounding or a big team anyway. And they kind of just conceded that they're not even going to try to be. As part of that, unless they make a move at the trade deadline or go after buying him or something like that, they just kind of look like they're conceding that they're going to go small kind of here on out, which is,
well, I mean, they've won 2 straight titles doing that. I think they've figured out exactly what they want to do. They've realized that they can pick their spots in the regular season, just make it to the, you know, they're all veterans for the most part, Miami.
It's true.
Just make it to the playoffs. I've seen it too many times from them where during the regular season, everyone's like, what's wrong with Miami? And then come playoff time, they flip the switch to 10 or 11 and just murder teams. And
yeah.
But I think there's a good chance Indiana can beat them this year. I really do. I think Indiana does the things that they don't like well. You talked about their size. Hibbert inside poses a lot of problems for them. And Paul George is twice as good as he was, you know, last year or the year before. So
yeah, he's found another level as well.
I think Oklahoma City really wants to see Indiana in the finals. I think they would match up much better with Indiana.
Absolutely. Well, let's get going on some of these questions. And some of these questions are written kind of in that moment where you didn't really know anything about the team. And so they were kind of coming out of that. They just beat Houston. They just beat Golden State. Who knows what's going to look like. So some of it may be no-brainers to you. So the first question we have is over under 60 wins for the Thunder.
Oh, I'm going to go over. They're too good in the regular season. Well, what are they at right now? What's the record right now? Do you know?
33-10.
33-10. Yeah. I'm going to go over just because what they're doing right now without Russell, and I think Russell's going to come back a lot sooner than they're saying. And when we saw how good the Thunder was playing when they had Russell against the Knicks and that whole stretch right before he got hurt. So I'm going to go over. They're the opposite of Miami. Like they're so young that they don't care. They're going to play hard every night. So I'm going to give them over 60.
Okay. They have on this – I always like to look at Tom Haberstroh's his statistics, his all that stuff. And so he has – I think he had their best with something ridiculous. But I think around 60, 61 is probably a good call. And they are right where they were last year. And I think this is a better team than they were last year. So I would probably agree with that as well. So – let's talk about Scott Brooks for just a second. How do you feel like he's performed in the absence of Russ as this run has been going, as they lost a few and got good? Would you rate it on 1 to 10? How would you give him a score?
I'd give him about a 6 or – I mean, 7. I'd give him a 7, solid 7. Not too high, not too low. I thought he did really well last night against the Spurs with his substitutions. I think he wants to play Adams more than he does, but Adams just cannot stay out of foul trouble. I don't think he's done a bad job this year. I think he's really done admirably with incorporating this new bench that everyone was so concerned about. So I can't I can't knock Scott. I don't like the offense a lot. Sometimes you wonder what they're doing on offense. Sometimes Kevin just has to do things on his own. So that's what keeps his score from being higher. But I can't fault the guy. Look at their record despite not having their second best player.
And I would have said maybe like you in the same sense that whenever they played that stretch where they lost 3 out of 4 and looked horrible, I feel like Brooks just trolls us all, like just makes us feel like he's not doing anything. And then all of a sudden they make these runs and you're like, oh, that's right. Well, we're still really good.
He likes Derek Fisher way too much. I mean, I like Fisher. I thought he was great last year in the playoffs. But he doesn't need to play 25 minutes. He doesn't need to be the first guy off the bench. I think that's when Brooks is trolling us, is when he picks Fisher to be the first guy off the bench in a game. So he's not without faults, but I can't fault Scotty. He's done a good job this year.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. So question number three, most surprising thing about this team aside from Russ's setback, what's the most surprising thing to you so far this year?
Well, I was going to say Jeremy Lamb, just the fact that he was such an unknown the way he's played, but I got to go with Perk. Perk's last 2 weeks has been shocking. You mentioned Tom Haberstroh. He named him his least valuable player in the entire league, and he had some pretty overwhelming numbers to back up his claim. And ever since then, Perk's gone on a tear. He's shutting guys down on the block. He had a nice block there the other night against Portland and hit that huge jumper against Portland. So I don't think anyone expected that out of Perk. You know, everyone likes Perk to come in and play defense and spots. I think that's how we would like to see him used. But he's played well the last 2 weeks. I think that was the most surprising thing I've seen. I think Perk's playing as well as, maybe since he got to the Thunder. I mean, you have to give credit where it's due, right?
Yeah, he looks – it's crazy. I've been okay with him playing, even okay with him playing down the line, because he's been so much better than he has been. I think you're right. Since he's been at the Thunders, this is his best little run. So, number four.
I still don't want him to play 25 minutes against the Heat, though.
No, exactly. And that's always been my biggest thing, is it's just, why do they have to play him so – like, use it as far as – matchups dictate it to be used.
Yeah, and that's probably what kept Scott's score from being higher, is his lack of adjusting the starting lineup. I mean, there's certain teams that Perk does not need to start and play 25 minutes against. There's just not. And so I don't know why he can't just start a different lineup. I don't know if it's against the rules for him, but that would be my main concern, is, yeah, there's great players for Perk to play against. We saw it with Dwight Howard. You know, he can play against Roy Hibbert, Tim Duncan. The list goes on. All the great bigs in the league. But trotting him out there 25 minutes and starting every game just seems a bad idea.
And he's not a center, in my opinion, and it's not a unique opinion. He's not a center that can force another team to have to react to it. Like, they can guard – the Heat can guard Perkins with Chris Bosh or – really with anybody, and it's not going to be a big disadvantage for the Heat to do so.
Yeah, what we saw against the Heat in the finals 3 years ago, whatever it was now, and the Thunder were down by 10 in the first quarter almost every single game they played the Heat in the finals.
Yeah.
Because their starting lineup just couldn't keep up, and Bosch was running free, and Scott Brooks never adjusted his starting lineup. So that'll be something he'll really have to do if they're matched up with the Heat, is you can't just trot out the same starting lineup just because that's your lineup. You got to match the Heat and stay in the game, because they were down. They dug a hole in every single game, and it came back to bite them.
Absolutely. All right, question number four. Odds that Reggie Jackson signs a contract extension with the Thunder.
Well, when he was in the six-man role and playing at just an incredible rate, and he looked like a starter in the league. Now he's regressed a little bit, having to fill in for Russell in the starting lineup. It's one thing to That's what everyone was concerned about James Harden, was can he do it against the starting lineups? And that's something Reggie's kind of run into with his defense, is going against the number one point guard is a lot different than going against the number two point guard. And mm-hmm. So his lack of defense lately, I think, has hurt his chances as far as getting a huge deal. So I think the odds are very, very good. I would say 90% that they're going to re-sign Reggie. I think they'll make room for him elsewhere They might have to get rid of Tabo or Perk or somebody, but they're not going to let Reggie Jackson walk, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So, agreed with that. Number five, speaking of Sam Presti, do you think he will make a trade before the February trade deadline? And who would you say is on the trading block for Oklahoma City?
I think Tabo is on the block. I think Perry Jones is on the block. I think those are the main two. I have a hard time seeing them dealing Perk just because of the leadership standpoint and the fact that they might need him or they will need him against some of the bigs in this league. And I don't think he'll make a deal. I just don't. But it's Sam Presti. The minute you think he'll zig, he zags. So
absolutely,
I would say no, but I'll say no. And then tomorrow he'll deal Perk, Tabo, and Reggie for, you know, somebody lucrative, and it'll be on the front page of ESPN.
Well, I think I'd agree with all of those, and it is the question. Like, it just depends on for Thunder fans, especially myself. It's every other day, it's something else. Like right now, I'm like, don't trade anybody. But last week, I said everybody but Durant and Russ are on the block. You know, who cares? You know, at that point. But it's just a weekly thing for most Thunder fans.
Well, and I think Thunder fans would like some kind of, I don't know why, but they just get enamored with like a blockbuster trade. Well, they're not going to make a blockbuster trade unless they deal Serge Ibaka, and that ain't going to happen. So yeah, if they make a deal, it's going to be a small bit part piece, maybe a shooter off the bench or something like that. But the thing is, they have a trade exception for, I think, around what, seven?
They've got two of them, I think, that get you somewhere around there, yeah.
They can hit the scales in their favor on a deal for sure, and they have to use those, so maybe the chances are higher than I'm giving credit for. But I think they'll run out and they won't use them, and they're going to go to war with who they have.
Yeah, and they also have two first round picks this year, which for a team like the Thunder is just, I mean, they don't need more players, I don't feel like, but Presti pulls great picks out of every single time, almost feels like. So
I know I'm of the point, like, they're young enough, trade your picks to get veteran players. That's kind of the mode I'm in right now. But Sam Presti, whoever he picks turns to gold. So who am I to argue?
Yeah, I think Roberson was a great pick as well this year. So I can't say anything about Presti.
Well, and Steven Adams, who I hated that pick. And I could not be any more wrong, which just goes to show you, don't – and Presti you should trust. So I'm never going to question him again.
Speaking of, in Presti we trust. So after watching a half season of Jeremy Lamb playing, what kind of player do you project him to be?
Oh, I don't think he's an all-star, but I think he can be, you know, the third best player on a contender. I think he's that good. He's, you know, a former lottery pick. I loved him at UConn. And the thing is, like, he's a shooter, he's a scorer, but his defense isn't that bad either. Just his length gives people problems. He's not like Tabo in his prime or anything, but he can play defense, and that's the thing. If you can play both ways, you're going to be extremely valuable. So I think once he becomes a veteran and gets more years under his belt, I think he can be the third best player on a contender, maybe second if he really turns it on.
Yeah, been impressed. His length is what gives people trouble, and it can make up for, you know, maybe some lack of discipline or whatever, but I would agree with that as well. And go ahead, sorry.
I want to see some personality out of him, though. I want him to get mean. I want him to hang out with Perk for about, you know, go on a road trip with Perk and have Perk teach him the of scowling and being mean, because he just, when he hits a three or falls on his face, he makes the same facial expression. You can't tell what he's thinking. So I want to see some more emotion out of Lambeau.
Absolutely, I love that. And last question we have is, obviously we talked about Steven Adams a little bit. So what's your favorite thing that he brings to the game about Steven Adams?
Well, the thing I love the most about him is the face he makes when he gets called for fouls, where he's just like, what? Like he isn't, it's not like a Perk face where he's mad. He just looks like dumbfounded that they're calling a foul on him. And the thing I love most about him is just his offensive rebounds. Just he can keep plays alive that the Thunder have in the past had no chance of keeping alive. And I think the way he crashes the boards, the energy he brings off the bench is something that was sorely needed. And he's really providing it for OKC. So the facial expressions kill me, and the offensive rebounding has been great.
I think he's a piece that will help in that play, in some of those playoff matches too. Like, he can go in there and dominate the Heat, like, because he's so athletically gifted and he's humongous. He can, I mean, they can't do anything with him on the offensive glass. It's when I can't remember what, maybe it was the Portland game when they subbed Robin Lopez out, all of a sudden Steven Adams was just, nobody could block him out on the offensive glass.
Yeah, there was another game recently that maybe Houston, might have been Houston, where Thunder were losing, they weren't looking that great, and he came in and just completely changed the game. I don't think it was Houston. That game was just nuts.
And Golden State. It might have been Golden State game, too.
I can't remember. I'm getting old, my memory. But there was a game where he just came in, and Thunder were getting out-rebounded badly, and they came in. He goes on a huge run, and all of a sudden they lead the game in rebounds. So he's a difference maker. The problem is he needs to stay out of foul trouble. Man, he's fouling, like, at a foul-per-minute clip, it seems like. So, yeah, like, that's the big concern for him. He's learning. He's still new to the game. But, I mean, Brooks can't keep him on the floor because – and a part of that's that he's not getting any calls. The refs – he's almost developed a reputation, and guys are kind of taking advantage of that against him, and he's getting some quick whistles.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. I have an affinity for that guy. And then the last question, this is just a new question. What do you think about the nickname the Slim Reaper for Kevin Durant?
I love it wholeheartedly. The problem is Kevin is just, he's so hard to nickname. There's so many names. Like, he didn't like Durantula. I hated it. KD is just his initials. That's kind of simple. I guess he's still KD, but the Slim Reaper is perfect. It describes a great nickname, not only just uses your name and maybe your characteristics, but it also describes your play. And that's exactly what he is in the fourth quarter. He's going to take you, and you're not going to do anything about it. So I don't know if you saw that Photoshop of him as the Slim Reaper, but it's
awesome.
So I'm in full support of it. You know, Jalen Rose, who I had a chance to interview recently, calls him Iceberg Slim. And I thought that was good. You know, Iceberg, you know, he's cold as ice and all that. But Slim Reaper's perfect. I don't think we're going to be able to top that.
Absolutely. Well, Carson, that's all we have for you, man. We appreciate you, as always, being a part of what we're doing on the podcast. And we look forward to doing it again.
Bye, man.